Chapter 3. Singer. Over the next few days, the rolling, cultivated hills seemed to get smaller, and soon there was forest all around them. As they made their way east, they sometimes passed other travelers. Some were traveling merchants, and often Saruth would stop to have a look at what they had for sale. Some were armored patrolmen on Cathberries who saluted Saruth and Makwa when they would wave at them. One was a dignitary from Wazella on a diplomatic mission that had several of his own guardsmen and servants traveling with him. They stopped and talked to Saruth for a while, and Makwa listened as he asked them questions about how to reach the capital city and to get an audience with the rulers there. As the road went on, Makwa noted that Saruth was right, and every night, just after darkness fell, they would come to an inn or a town. One night they stopped at a town called Misto's Keep, which was built on a large hill that overlooked the forest and bordered the river Yetempe. After Sebastian was put up in the local stable and Makwa made sure he was comfortable, he was given a special treat when Saruth took him to a local Leplin that was in town. There were games of skill and chance, songs, dancers, dangerous feats, and live theater mystery presentations. Makwa spent the few coins given him by Saruth on a chance to win a large straw hat woven in colorful rustic design. The game involved watching 7 war-painted dancers wearing hip pouches move together in a circle surrounded by torches. As they moved, Makwa would toss 4 small grain-filled balls to them, 1 tan and 3 black. When the drumming gamekeeper gave the call, the dancers would catch them and continue their dance, tossing and kicking them to one another while moving around each other in acrobatic fashion. When the gamekeeper stopped his drumming, the dancers would line up, and Makwa had 2 guesses to find which one had the tan ball. Saruth watched the game and chuckled as Makwa tried to guess. He entered the game and crossed his arms, watching the dancers in silence except when instructed to toss in a ball. When the dancers lined up, he pointed to the man 3rd from the left. The watching crowd let out a small cheer when the man held up the tan ball. Bowing, Saruth accepted the hat from the wind and stuck it on Makwa's head. Makwa noted the way Saruth seemed to not watch any individual dancer. Later that night, as they made their way back to the inn, he pulled the hat from his head and looked at it. "Saruth, how did you win that game?" Saruth glanced over at him and opened his mouth to answer, but as a few people passed, he closed it again. There was a moment of silence between them, but for footsteps along the city boardwalk.
"Ask me again once we've left town."
"Okay."
That night, fitful dreams gripped Makwa. Images of his sick mother haunted him as he tossed and turned. He awoke early with her whispers echoing in his head.
"Makwa, follow your heart. Sing if you can. Let your songs bring hope to others."
The pre-dawn sky was dark through the open window, and Makwa watched as the stars seemed to fade from existence in the clear sky. Soon, a deep blue replaced the inky night's star-filled blanket, and the first chirps of the squirrel-like crackles could be heard in the trees outside. The 2 moons could be seen, one setting and the other coming up, lit by the rising sun from beyond the other horizon. The rising moon glittered like a bright, distant sea of crystals, silver and blue and lavender all at once. Makwa jumped as Saru spoke.
"Troubled dreams. It's unusual for you to wake before I do, and you don't seem to like mornings much."
"Mother."
Saruth nodded.
"If you want to talk about that, I'll listen."
Makwa rolled inward on his bed, his back to Saruth for a moment as the man watched from his own bed. It took a moment for him to be ready.
"Saruth, I figured out what I would do if I could do anything."
He turned, looking into Saruth's ice blue eyes.
"What's that, Makwa?"
"I'd bring back my mother, make her alive and well again."
Saruth smiled. His face showed gentleness as he shook his head.
"I don't think you can do that, Makwa, but I find your love for your mother admirable. I know many songs, but none of my songs or those of any other singer can bring someone back once they're long gone."
Makwa let out a languid sigh and closed his eyes. He gritted his teeth and tried to hold back tears, willing that Saruth wouldn't see him cry. He growled under his breath.
"Then I'll never see her again. But in my dreams, I keep dreaming of her. She tells me something, almost always the same thing. It's the last thing she said to me before her eyes closed."
Saruth sat up.
"What did she say?"
Makwa frowned and squirmed, pulling the sleeping furs tighter about him.
"It doesn't matter. Mom is dead, and you said I can't bring her back, so it isn't important."
Saruth growled. The soft sound sent shivers up and down Makwa's spine, and he sat up with a start to look at Saruth. He'd never heard him make an unhappy sound before, and it was unnerving. Saruth held out a hand.
Makwa, evidently it's very important what she said. Otherwise you wouldn't keep dreaming about it. Are you certain you don't want to tell me about it?
Makwa snipped at him and tipped his ears back, but figured he'd better tell, or the man wouldn't stop asking. As annoying as it was to talk, it would be more annoying not to.
She told me to sing. She told me to bring hope to others and follow my heart.
Saruth licked his nose and seemed to think about that for a moment. He nodded.
All right. Let's go get some breakfast, shall we?
Makwa opened his mouth to protest the sudden change of subject, but a familiar rumble in his belly made him think better of it. A short time later, over a bowl of grain noodles and fried crackle soup, Makwa listened as Saruth talked to merchants and townsfolk about weather and traveling. He found out that there had been animal attacks on people traveling to and from Regenta. One of the merchants said,
"My best advice, friend, is to carry a sword and watch your back. Those Fazugas are out in numbers this year. You'll also want to make sure your companions are armed."
Makwa blinked and interrupted. "What's a Fazuga?" The merchant made a menacing face and held out both hands, claws out as he described the monkey-like carnivore, and said they liked to eat children more than anything else, but were not too picky when they were in large numbers. The man made a clawing gesture at Makwa.
"They'll drag you off if they can."
Saruth seemed unfazed. He looked to Makwa and leaned to say behind a hand,
"We'll be fine. We'll just go shopping before we leave here and prepare for what may come our way."
Shop they did. Makwa explored several outfits, trying this tunic and that. It took him a while, but he eventually found something he liked in the form of a natural off-white futh tunic and brown pantaloons. He hadn't had new clothing in a long time, and it sure was nice that it didn't smell bad from the beginning. Having sleeves the right length was good, too. He also got armor. It was thick leather with thin metal plates inside it and covered Makwa down to his knees.
"It's for an adult, isn't it?"
Saruth grinned. "You'll grow into it, and it fits well enough."
There were, of course, thick leather pants that had to be rumpled at the knees with loops and cords, and matching boots, too. A big, warm, futh-lined, Cathberry-hide cloak finished the outfit and would keep Makwa warm. He had worn fishing sandals all his life, and the big boots felt funny on his feet as he clomped around. It would take a while to get used to them. Saruth wouldn't buy any new tunics or pantaloons for himself. He said his robes and his special travel boots would be fine, but he did buy one of the cloaks. They were almost out of the shop when he stopped Makwa.
"You need something more. We should get you a weapon or two."
While Saruth did some browsing, Makwa picked out a small spear for himself. He liked it because it was somewhat like the fishing spear he had used when he was younger. It had a metal head on it that was polished so well that he could see his reflection in it. After paying the shopkeeper well, Saruth signaled Makwa that he was ready to go, and they walked to the inn to collect Sebastian and the cart. Dressed in his colorful woven grass hat and his new traveling outfit, Makwa was ready for anything. Well, almost anything. He sat up in the cart so people could see him as they departed. As they crossed the heavy wooden bridge high over the river Yatempe, he looked down between bridge timbers and clung to the cart so hard that his claws stuck into the wood. Saruth laughed. The noonday sun washed over the pair of travelers, and town faded from sight behind them. Makwa glanced back and then over at his companion.
"How did you win the hat, and why did you get quiet when I told you what my mom said?"
At first there was no answer, but after a moment Saruth said in a hushed tone,
"The hat was easy. A game like Changalu can be won by keeping track of the correct game piece. I used my mind for it, not my eyes. About what your mother said, I'll say this. I think she knew something about you that you don't. Very soon I think you'll know it too. Ask me again when you can pick up a pebble without touching it or using anything else you can see to touch it."
"Without touching it?"
Makwa's eyes narrowed. Saruth had to be crazy.
Saruth smiled. "It might never happen, but it might happen tomorrow. I won't tell you anything more about it, so you'll have to figure this part out on your own. I have faith in you, Makwa."
"You mean you're going to be difficult?"
Makwa growled and crossed his arms.
"It isn't that."
Saruth glanced over at him, offering an appraising look.
"Well?"
Makwa spread his hands.
"What is it, then?"
Saruth glanced back and then looked ahead at the road.
"Singers aren't safe in the world, Makwa. We are feared and misunderstood for what we can do, which is why we hide it sometimes. Suppose the crowd knew I could follow the game piece without seeing it. Do you think they'd take kindly to it?"
Isn't that cheating? Makwa cut him a sidelong glance as they rolled along. Saru smiled.
Do the game rules disallow it?
Makwa blinked, rubbing his chin as he thought about it.
Well, no. But I don't think that they thought about people being able to do that when they made them.
Saru nodded.
It would make them exceptionally uncomfortable.
Makwa watched Saru for a long moment, examining his white face in profile as he drove the cart, and then took in his blue flowing robes.
Do you really think you're hiding the fact that you're different?
Saru chuckled as he glanced over.
No, but there's a difference between being seen as an eccentric and being seen as a danger to those around you.
A what?
An eccentric, a strange person.
Saru glanced at the winding path ahead where breaks in the trees made small meadows.
Why should you worry if they think you're dangerous? I mean, in the stories I've heard about singers, they usually involve them being able to throw fire. Why would anyone want to mess with someone like that?
Saru took a deep breath, closed his eyes, shook his head, and his answer came in a tone that carried disappointment tinged with regret.
Makwa.
He snorted.
Well, why would they?
I'll tell you more about it when the time is right and you have a bit more perspective. But for now, however, I'll leave you with two things to consider.
Makwa's ears drooped a bit, and he blinked.
First, do you care about how others in general feel about you? Second, is casually frightening a large group of people you don't know a wise idea?
Makwa blinked and then looked at his new boots as he sighed.
I guess so, and I guess not.
Saru's hand on his shoulder was comforting.
Good. I'll tell you more in time.
Dusk fell, bringing with it the changing scents and sounds of nighttime. Makwa's ears perked as he listened to the wind whisper through the trees over the movements of the cart, and he imagined that he could almost hear it speaking to him. Saru leaned forward and gazed into the far horizon while singing under his breath,
The sharpest eyes I have to see, sharpen still and be with me. Help me now afar to see and gather light between each tree.
After saying this a few times, he frowned and blinked, rubbing his eyes.
Makwa, tonight we camp.
Makwa squinted at him.
But you said there'd be inns.
Saru nodded and shrugged.
I'm not always right, you know. I'm mortal as you are.
He led Sebastian away from the road and into a small field and had Makwa unharness the animal, then set to attaching the canvas he purchased to the cart, making a tent along one side of it. Makwa watched this continue as he went about doing his job of rolling the local grass up into armfuls and laying them out under the covering. Saru smiled at Makwa as he pounded the last stake into the ground.
It's time to sleep. Tie Sebastian to a stake there. He pointed. But give him some length on the cord so that he can keep watch for us and eat his fill of grass.
Makwa nodded, doing as he was told. He didn't go to bed right away after that, but instead ate some of the spice cake he was so fond of and followed it up with a good drink of flavorful fruit juice they'd gotten from Misto's keep. He offered Sebastian some as well. The calfberry lapped from his cupped hand, licked Makwa's cheek after he finished his taste, and gave a soft coo before going about eating some of the long grass. Makwa watched the stars, seeing how they seemed to wink at him from far beyond the heavens.
Saruf?
Yes, Makwa.
There was no annoyance in the answer. Makwa continued to stare up at the delicate points of light far overhead.
What are the stars? I've always wanted to know where they go when the sun comes up. Do they hide behind the sky?
Saruf chuckled.
The stars are like the sun, only much farther away. In a way, they do hide behind the sky, but probably not in the way you imagine. The light from the sun hides them from you in daylight by reflecting that daylight off the sky. They don't go anywhere when the sun rises. You just can't see them until the sun sets again.
Oh.
Curiosity struck again a moment later.
Saruth, if there are other suns, are there other places like this?
Saruth crept out, peering from under the covering as he turned over to lay there and looked up past Makwa at the sky.
Yes, there are other worlds like ours, and on them are other creatures who look up and wonder what you're wondering now.
Makwa looked down at Saruth and lifted a brow.
Are you sure? How do you know?
He sighed and wriggled back under the canvas.
Because I have seen it. Jehovah, the creator of all things, has blessed us, and because of it we can see many things.
Makwa shuffled his feet, his toe finding a pebble. He reached down and picked it up, and then rolled it in his hand.
Saruth, how do you see so far away?
I'll tell you that when you can find an answer to the question involving what's in your hand.
Makwa looked at his pebble, sighed, and then crawled beside Saruth on the bundled grass and pulled his cloak over himself. He closed his eyes and fell asleep with the pebble still in his grasp.